From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Nandi Show, connecting your neighborhood with the world. The endangered species list of print media isn't all that exclusive these days, but alternative media hold a special place on the list of news sources on the brink of extinction. The local rag you pick up once a week for the sprawling feature stories, the newspaper dedicated to covering your area's gay community, they're in every bit as much danger as the white rhino or the Kemp's Ridley turtle. Just this week, the lights went out at America's oldest gay newspaper right here in Washington. Joining us to explore how these publications can chart a path for survival and what our communities will lose if alternative media go the way of the dodo. Joining us in the studio is Mark Jerkowitz, Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Mark is a former ombudsman and media beat writer at the Boston Globe and a former columnist and press critic at the Boston Phoenix newspaper. Mark Jerkowitz, good to see you again.
It's good to be here, Kojo.
Also with us is Kevin Neff. Kevin Neff was editor of the Washington Blade before it closed down earlier this week. He is the future editor of the still-to-be-named successor to the Blade, a newspaper that covered issues about and important to Washington's gay community. Kevin Neff, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I am not sure it's good to see you again under these circumstances.
It is not.
Joining us by telephone is Richard Karpel. He is the executive director of the Association of Alternative News Weeklies. He's the incoming executive director of the American Society of News Editors. Richard, is it Richard Karpel? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Richard, today's economic climate is a rough one for everyone, whether you're an international juggernaut like the New York Times or a community newspaper with a newsroom that you can fit into a basement. Your group represents dozens of alternative weekly publications. What does today's economic climate spell for them?
Well, it's pretty tough. You know, there is a difference, I think, between the papers that are in the larger markets. They're the ones that are having the most difficulty, and then the papers in the smaller markets are faring a little bit better. The biggest reason is probably just there's just a lot of competition in the major markets, both not just on the internet, which is what you hear all the time, but there's also a lot of competition in print. And if you look at what did happen to the Blade, they have a competitor in D.C. as well. So those kind of situations you don't see as much when you get into the smaller markets.
Mark, you've spent a lot of time in both of these worlds, writing for both Boston's major daily newspaper, The Globe, and its alternative weekly, The Phoenix. How would you compare the struggles of the big daily newspaper to the challenges facing alternative media?
Well, it's interesting. We should say that really in the wave of sort of cutbacks and the media recession that struck in the last 5 years or so, really papers like the Boston Globe, the big metro dailies, were in that first line that got hit. They were big operations with huge overheads and overarching ambition and national reporters and international bureaus. And frankly, and huge classified ad bases, those kind of papers took the biggest hit initially. And lower down, kind of in the food chain, when it came to facing the impacts of the recession, were publications, two kinds of publications, community-oriented publications, smaller publications, and publications with a niche. And really, some of these bigger papers that we talk about, when they first had these cutbacks, they said, okay, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to sort of restrict our ambition and we're going to get back to our knitting and get more local. Well, a lot of the alternative press essentially has been there are a lot of reasons why they weren't hit initially as badly and may still not be. And one is that they are niche publications. They have a very clear market. They tend to be local. They tend to have provided an alternative voice in the community. Frankly, they were not big operations where people went out for three martini lunches during the daytime and came back with huge expense accounts. They ran. They were structured economically. They didn't pay the highest salaries in the business. Most of them didn't have unions. They ran. They were tightly run organizations that didn't have a lot of excess spending from day one. So for a long time, they were relatively immune to some of the impacts that struck elsewhere. Now I think they're starting to feel them.
Kevin, the last time we talked, the Blade was celebrating its 40th anniversary. It was a happy time just about 2 weeks ago. On Monday, you and your staff were told to move out by mid-afternoon, something that I frankly still find upsetting. What happened at the Blade?
Well, we were told to vacate by mid-afternoon on Monday. It came out of the blue. We had no idea. I had no idea. The publisher had no idea. I think in our case, it's a little bit different. The Blade actually operated in the black. We were turning a profit, which makes the whole thing all the more confusing. There remain a lot of unanswered questions there. The parent company was in receivership. There was a lot going on in the background. And we were ultimately, I think, dragged down by a company that had taken on too much debt, and had we been allowed to stand on our own, we'd still be publishing.
The parent company, Window Media, its co-president said the company also ceased operations as its other gay-oriented publications, and that they were forced into Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which means liquidation. But it's my understanding that you've kept the staff together, that you're planning on publishing in some form tomorrow and continuing the mission under a different banner in the future. What can you tell us about the future?
Yes. The shock and anger that hit us on Monday very quickly gave way to optimism. The response from the community has just been incredibly overwhelming. We are going to be back on the streets tomorrow with a new publication called the DC Agenda. It will be a modest a couple of weeks, and we expect to build things back to a more respectable size for the December 4th issue. But we will have an 8-page modest placeholder out tomorrow.
That's going to hit the streets tomorrow, and the name of it is the DC Agenda.
Yes.
Back up for a second, because frankly, I'm still not over this yet. What happened
Me
to
either.
You on Monday morning was you walked into the office and were told what?
I was the first one there about 8 o'clock. I walked in, and there were the last two corporate officers from Atlanta were there waiting, which I knew was probably not a good sign. I was told that we were shutting down effective immediately, and we all had till 3 o'clock to clean out. That it was a Chapter 7 bankruptcy liquidation, and that was pretty much it.
Gold watch and appreciation party to follow later.
Well, I mean, not only did we not get the gold watch or the severance, but they actually canceled our paychecks from the previous 2 weeks. That was Monday was payday, so my staff worked for 80 hours prior without getting paid.
We don't have a gold watch for you. This is our gift to you. We are reneging on your paychecks
Yes.
for the past couple of weeks. Kevin Neff was the editor of the Washington Blade. He's the future editor of what is now called the DC Agenda, which will be hitting the streets tomorrow. He joins us in the studio along with Mark Jerkowitz, associate director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Joining us by telephone is Richard Karpel, executive director of the Association for Alternative News Weeklies and the incoming executive director of the American Society of News Editors. We're inviting you to join this conversation by calling 800-433-8850. What do you think alternative media contribute to daily life in a community like Washington, D.C.? 800-433-8850, or you can send us a tweet at Kojo Show. Back to you for 1 second, Mark Jerkowitz, since I just raised the issue of what people think is contributed by alternative newspapers. How would you compare the mission of a publication like The Phoenix, which you worked for, an alternative publication, to a mission at a major daily like The Globe, which you also worked for?
There are a lot of differences. What traditionally has sort of defined the alternative press and publications like The Phoenix, for example, are several things. One is there tends to be traditionally an emphasis on the arts and culture. and often aimed at sort of younger, more mobile groups. You know, the alternative press really started to flourish in the late 60s and early 70s. The Phoenix was created back in the 1960s when you had this baby boom generation starting to come of age. You had the Vietnam War, all of these things, and sort of merging at the same time. So the things that the alternative press have traditionally delivered are real arts and culture reporting, real voice and advocacy often when it came to coverage of politics in a community, a tendency to produce deeper, more investigative stories, not necessarily the classic spotlight pieces that are eight-part series on how a housing authority is run, but generally speaking, the stories traditionally in the mainstream in the alternative press have tended to be longer, more in-depth. Frankly, one of the things that attracted me to the alternative press, which may no longer be as true, was the fact that there was media criticism in the alternative press. That's one of the reasons that I went to work at the Phoenix. Places like the Phoenix and the Village Voice were originally places where people went to get, you know, sort of outside criticism of the rest of the big media universe there. So I would say voice more than anything else.
Well, Richard Carpell, a lot of people fall in love with alternative media, particularly alternative weeklies, for the depth, the feature stories that can sometimes take more than an entire lunch break to read. What's going to happen to this kind of storytelling as these publications scale back resources or push more of their content online?
Well, you know, most of our papers are still doing that kind of reporting, and there are less pages to do it in, and so but I think city paper is a good example. I mean, they're still doing a lot of great long-form journalism. I think what the challenge is, everything's moving to the internet. I mean, at some point, print is going away. I don't know if it's 100 years or 50 years or whenever it is. Not everyone agrees with me on that, by the way. But at some point, it's going away, and things are transitioning to the internet. And the question is, how do you make that work? And how do you, both in terms of journalism and in terms of a business side of it. And the journalism, I think people are figuring stuff out. Business-wise, people haven't figured it out yet. So that's the challenge.
We look forward to being joined by Washington City Paper editor Eric Wemple by phone later in the broadcast. Let's go to Roy in Burke, Virginia. Roy, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Enjoy your show. Thanks. I have worked in, I guess you'd call it, information management technologies and information resources, library science type stuff for, 30-some-odd years. And one of the things I think really benefit the traditional press is to recognize that the Internet's here and begin using some technologies to do what I would call news modeling, to essentially take news issues, news items, people and subjects in the news, and connect them together, sort of connect the dots. There's technology out there that can make that possible, and then suddenly the news becomes richer, it becomes contextually more informed, it can be validated, it can be verified.
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about, Roy?
Well, it's what an example. You can get free software called CMAP, concept mapping, from down in Florida, University of Western Florida, and you could essentially create a server and have different subjects like the Blade or another little regional newspaper, or even a national level newspaper, create links, if you will, connect the dots between different subjects and put that online, and you could still have your online.
Oh, I see exactly what you're saying.
Articles. Okay. Yeah. Again.
I see where you're going on this, and obviously I think that's something that's likely to be happening in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, news is always news, and if you can pay for it and get richer context news that's been vetted and validated and all this other stuff, then you, in essence, are moving the press out of paper and the content of a story to include much more information about the context of a story. And that can be just as interesting for people as the content of a story.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. And what he's really talking about here, gentlemen, is, I guess, a kind of business model. What concerns, if any, do you have about the business model of your parent company when you were at The Blade, Kevin Neff?
Well, the same concerns I think that everybody has. But I think there's a lot of conjecture out there about newspapers needing to do more with technology. But when you look at print publications, including The Blade, I mean, we were doing all of the things that you would expect of a modern website, video, podcast, blogging.
If we can only figure out how to make money off
Twitter.
Of it.
Well, that's the question that, I mean, Rupert Murdoch can't answer that question, and the CEO of Google can't answer that question. So, whoever figures that out is going to be a rich person.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation about alternative news media with Richard Karpel, Executive Director of the Association of Alternative News Weeklies and incoming Executive Director of the American Society of News Editors. Kevin Naff was the editor of the Washington Blade before it closed earlier this week. He is now the editor of the D.C. Agenda, which hits the streets tomorrow. And Mark Jerkowitz is Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. What do you think communities will lose if alternative media die out and we're left with major newspapers and other mainstream media only? 800-433-8850 or shoot an email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nandi.
I'm Sam Litzinger. This Saturday in the Animal House, kids and animals are a natural combination, and musician Justin Roberts works that magic. That's the Animal House, this Saturday morning at 7 on WAMU 88.5.
One day Willie went walking on the water. Well, he wasn't really walking. Yes, he was. Yes, he was. He went walking on the...
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Hodgson Consulting, an Ektron Gold partner, providing content management solutions for clients' web-based initiatives. Hodgson Consulting, fueled by technology, powered by people, on the web at hodgsonconsult.com. From Imagination Stage, presenting Disney's Mulan, a new stage musical for families based on the Disney movie. There are many weekend and weekday matinees throughout the holiday season. Tickets available at imaginationstage.org.
You can get your news fix as soon as you wake up. Tune into the latest on the economy.
We're just standing around looking at the wreck when somebody ought to be moving the wreck off the highway so the economic traffic can proceed.
To what's happening in the arts.
The materials that are challenged and banned are the books that say something about the human condition.
Wake up to the world with Morning Edition from NPR News.
That's Morning Edition, every weekday morning from 5 to 10 on WAMU 88.5.
Welcome back to our conversation on alternative newspapers with Richard Karpel, Executive Director of the Association of Alternative News Weeklies and incoming Executive Director of the American Society of News Editors. Kevin Naff was editor of the Washington Blade, and he is now editor of DC Agenda, which hits the streets tomorrow. We'll cover issues about and important to Washington's gay community. And Mark Jerkowitz is Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's a former ombudsman and media beat writer at the Boston Globe and a former columnist and press critic at the Boston Phoenix newspaper. You can call us 800-433-8850 or you can send us a tweet at Kojo Show. Since our last caller brought up the business of trying to do more online, starting with you, Richard Karpel, how so many of these parent companies like Window Media and Creative Loafing are struggling. It seems that the trend is to turn to the web for survival. What promise does the web hold for alternative media, in your view, Richard?
Well, more readers and especially more younger readers. I mean, if you you talk to people 20 years or younger, I mean, that's what they know. And the question is how to make money off publishing to those readers on the internet. So the first part is a no-brainer. The second part is, as Kevin was mentioning before, just no one's figured out yet.
We got an email from an anonymous lover of alternative weekly newspapers. I've skipped around a few towns, probably a few too many towns to name this on this email, but I've always sought out the alternative weeklies in these places, whether it was the Village Voice or a Washington City paper. Why? Because these papers give you a much better sense for the soul of a city than the big daily print newspapers. It's not that the reporters at these places consider themselves community reporters. If anything, alternative weekly reporters can come off as downright snarky sometimes, but you always get the sense that these reporters are investing themselves in what their cities look like from the ground, the street, not from a cubicle or a press row. They get it, and I'll miss that if they go. Well, they are not gone as yet, but I never gave you the opportunity, Mark Jerkowitz, to respond to the issue of migrating online.
Well, there isn't the alternative press is no slower, maybe even be quicker than the mainstream press to have understood the role of the internet. Most of the alternative media that I know of, alternative weeklies, have for quite some time put most of their energies there. I know I left the Phoenix in 2006, and by then really it was web development that was driving much of the intellectual energy there. The problem is, and we've said it over again, there are a lot of the problems that are in the mainstream media that are now mirrored in the alternative press. And the big simple one is, how are you going to get how are you going to monetize the web? That's an issue across across the spectrum for both the alternative press and the mainstream press. The other thing that's kind of interesting is this issue of debt and the companies. Kevin mentioned the debt that his company had gotten involved in. Creative Loafing, which is one of the big alternative chains, just came out of bankruptcy because of debt problems earlier this year.
The City Paper's parent company.
Right? Yeah, City Paper's parent company. That's something that's also been mirrored in the mainstream media. There are papers in the mainstream press that are making a lot of money where the companies like the Tribune Company, for example, that are in real trouble because of the debt burden, not that the papers themselves are doing that poorly. So now the systemic problems, including the recession, that have affected the mainstream press are being felt are the same fundamental issues that are bedeviling the alternative press. I'd say one other quick thing, which is the other thing about the alternative press that maybe creates a different kind of challenge is they were the other kind of voice in a community. They were more opinionated. Frankly, they were a little bluer. You used four-letter words that you couldn't use in a family newspaper. There was a lot more politics, a lot more opinion. Well, certainly you can get that all over the web now. The franchise that the alternative paper in a town might have had for being kind of the fearless, I'm going to tell you what I think voice without the constraints of mainstream journalism can be found in many places on blogs, elsewhere around the web now, that I think creates some editorial competition as well.
Kevin, it might be too soon to raise this question in the wake of what happened just this past Monday, but what Mark just said and what you said earlier about the blade being in the black, it seems as if it might be, in the final analysis, a good idea to have shed the parent company, so to speak, because if you can build in the way that you liked it, the blade itself can become some self-sustaining. DC agenda, I'm sorry.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things I failed to understand was the extent to which the local community really understood that the company was owned by the blade was owned by an entity from out of town. And people didn't like that. I've heard from advertisers now who have come forward and said, well, now that you're done with that company, we'd like to advertise again. So there really is a strong local connection to the paper.
And before we get back to the phones, continuing the online conversation for a second, did you notice any changes in the expectations of your readership when you started to push more content online and beef up your web presence? Except the expectation of everything free.
Everything free and everything fast. And now we went from the staff for a weekly without adding staff to a 24/7 news operation where if something broke on Saturday night, people expected to find it. That took some
adjusting. Hey, you're alive on Sundays, aren't you?
Right.
Coach, I should mention one other thing. For many of the alternative weeklies in this country, even their print editions have been free for a long time now. The Phoenix was actually one of the last ones in the country. Used to charge as much as $1.50 per issue out of the box.
Because they're also alternative advertising media.
And they made a calculation that they could do better with bigger circulation and more eyeballs and a wider audience by disseminating freely. They could attract more advertisers than they could the other way around. So for much of the alternative press, they've been ahead on that issue of the mainstream media of actually having the print product be essentially gratis for the consumer.
Richard Carpel, on the expectations of the online community when a newspaper or an alternative newspaper goes online?
What are the expectations?
The expectations, because
I think Kevin said it before. I mean, it's just people, it used to be for an alternative newspaper, you put a paper out once a week and you put the issue out in the street and maybe have a day off and then come back to work. With the web, it's just constant and people, and you have to be constant. And that's something that actually took a while for most of our papers to deal with. I mean, I think the initial impulse is just to extend the metaphor of the newspaper onto the web, and that just doesn't work. So the struggle is, for print publications, not just alternative, even the mainstream, is you've got a really hard job putting out a paper. If you're a daily, you put out a paper daily. If you're a weekly paper, you got to put it out weekly, and that's hard. And now all of a sudden you're being asked to invent a new business, and it's really difficult. And I think in our business, with the alternative Newsweek, because I think it's been probably the last couple years when the light bulb went on over people's heads. They realized, you know, we've really got to be serious about this. And I go back to the city paper as a really good example of a paper that I'd say in the last 2 years has just made a tremendous push to reinvent themselves. And if you look at their website, they're doing incredible stuff. And I think they would, if Eric gets on the, you know, when he comes on later, he'll tell you. I mean, a couple years ago, they were really behind the curve. And so, you know, it's just you got to do it faster, more immediate. And there's other details that make it a little bit differently. One, I'll give you an example, is the headlines. You do headlines in an alternative newspaper, and you can kind of do little kind of pun headlines. That's been the kind of the standard. You can't do that online because then people don't know what they're clicking on. So there's just a whole different ball game, and it's a struggle to figure it out.
On to Theresa in Washington, D.C. Theresa, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. I've never called into a radio station before. I'm actually a straight school teacher in Washington, D.C., and I have a strong opinion about Mr. Neff's situation. If I had $1 million, I'd give it to him and his staff right now.
I'm sure he's been hearing that a lot.
because I know what it's like for young adults to have to be brave enough to come out of the closet, and to have a strong community like that is very important. I'm sorry, I'm emotional because I really applaud him and his staff. And I want to say have the courage to go forward with their message. It's really wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And Kevin has indicated to us that he didn't even realize the extent of support and understanding that this community had for The Blade. And you are, I guess, Theresa, another example of that. Thank you very much for your call. And yes, they will, it would appear, continue to publish as the D.C. agenda. Here is Kristen in Bethesda, Maryland. Kristen, your turn.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Kojo. First time also on a radio program. My question goes back to somebody that you had on earlier talking about the death of publishing or print publishing and how young people are purely relying on internet publishing. And if that really is the case, my husband is a magazine publisher, and I myself, as a cook, I like my magazines coming. I like my newspapers. My husband and I sit around and read the newspaper in the morning. And, you know, yes, I can use iGourmet to get my recipes, but I really enjoy it when I get that magazine and I can look through it. And so really, do your guests feel that print medium is really going to be obsolete at some point in time?
Well, there are differences as to the time period, and there are differences as to whether or not print media will ever become obsolete. But there seems to be little doubt that more and more content will be, so to speak, migrating online, and that is, for the time being, the wave of the future. Mark Jerkowitz?
Well, one reason you're not going to see print disappear right away is for the very problem we've talked about and lamented on this show, which is the lack of ability to monetize the web. So even now, with all the circulation declines that we have in the mainstream daily newspapers and all the talk about how expensive it is to run presses or put gas in trucks that take your papers out, in many of these papers, 90% of the revenue is still coming from the print product, not the online product. So no one's going to cut off their nose to spite their face at this point, and that means that print's not going to vanish. I'd also say there's a difference between magazines and newspapers. The magazine industry has been hit hard, particularly the news weeklies. But magazines are a different animal in many respects than the daily newspaper. They're more tactile. It's a different experience. If they're on your coffee table a week later, you're not embarrassed. They're not yellowing. So you know, I would certainly also divide the magazine world, and particularly sort of the consumer magazine world, from the newspaper world.
Kristen, go ahead, Richard.
There's a couple other things I think that are driving print and why it's going away. Number one is just generational. I think the caller mentioned, my guess is the caller is probably around, I'm 51, maybe they're around that age. If you grew up with print, you have certain habits, and you're not going to give up those habits. And so, but if you talk to people who are, you know, 20, 30 years old, you know, they are happy to look at just electronic information. The other side of it is just technology. Technology is driving this, and what's going to happen is it's already started with things like the Kindle and the iPhone, but it's just going to get better and better, and at some point they're going to develop some technology that replicates all the great things that we love about print. But then what they're not going to have to do is cut trees down in Canada and ship them 3,000 miles to make it into a and then put it in the trucks to make it into the newspapers. And so that, so it's the generational thing, and then the technology that ultimately is driving it. And I think that's going to happen, you know, whether or not the companies make money or not. I mean, it's just going to happen. And you know, and I, the question is, how quickly?
Well, it can't happen forever. And you know, I am sort of an agnostic when it comes to the platform. I don't really much care if people read our stuff, you know, online or in print or on the iPhone, but they need to pay for it.
And that's the bottom line, indeed, for the survival of whether we're talking about mainstream or alternative media. On now to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, your turn.
Yes, thank you, Kojo. Visiting from Austin, Texas, but always enjoy listening to your show, and I'm in D.C. I want to turn back to the business model for a second again, and we had a high-profile launch of a new publication in Austin earlier this month called the Texas Tribune. Editor-in-chief and CEO Evan Smith, who some of you may know from the magazine business, Texas Monthly. It's primarily an all-online publication, but they founded the organization as a nonprofit. And I'd like to hear the panel's sort of comments about the notion of a nonprofit media model being a more and more increasingly chosen option for media. Thanks.
Mark Derkowitz, start with you.
Yeah, well, I think it is going to become a more and more chosen model for the media. I mean, the truth is, the way out of the crisis here, there's no simple way out of the economic problems that are transforming the journalism industry. And so what the consensus now is that there's, quote-unquote, no magic bullet. There are going to be a lot of different models tried, a lot of different experiments, a lot of different partnerships, a lot of different ways of trying to make money. Clearly, there is going to be there are a couple ideas. One is the nonprofit model. There's also a lot of talk about the public sector getting more involved in quote-unquote saving the news, whether it entails changing bankruptcy laws or tax policy. So I think you're going to see a lot of different ideas tried. None of them are going to be able to be applied broadly across the board. I do think the nonprofit model is one that will be looked at, as you may or may not know. Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland actually has proposed legislation that would involve making it easier for newspapers under certain circumstances to become nonprofits and to be in that nonprofit model. So I think that there are going to be you're going to see more solutions along those lines, and you may see to some degree more clamor for public sector involvement in policy matters that are going to ostensibly, people think, maybe help save some of these news organizations.
Do we know yet whether the D.C. agenda is going to be a nonprofit?
We kicked it around. It's not something we're pursuing at the moment. Obviously, other folks are. I think it's a great idea for ProPublica, organizations that are doing really investigative enterprise work. You know, I worry about what it does to discourage entrepreneurs from striking out with a new venture.
Thank you very much for your call, Steve. Joining us now by telephone is the editor of Washington City Paper, Eric Wemple. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on, although you got a lot of great people there. I don't know how I'm going to fit in here.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how, because we've been talking a great deal about migrating online, and the Washington City Paper has been cited as a good example over the past 2 years of a newspaper making a transition to being online, and we don't as yet know exactly how successful that is. You can tell us, but allow me to bring it in the form of an email that we got from Andrew on Capitol Hill, who writes, "Don't get me wrong, I'll still read the city paper online. A guy's got to have something fun to read if he's going to survive the jungle of a mundane office. But let's be clear, I need something to read with my morning bagel at the coffee shop. I need something to read when I take my lunch to the cafeteria. And I ain't taking my laptop with me. I need that print copy. Right now, he can do both with city paper. How is that working out for you?"
It's straining us. It's straining us to the nth degree, you know. We do obviously our online stuff, we do our print stuff, and we also do some special issues that take everybody out of the rotation, and so it's a tremendous strain. It's producing the two platforms with half the staff, so people I think are burning out, but they're it's also a glorious undertaking at the very same time. The web is a really interactive, fun medium in which to produce journalism. So I'm sort of half of us are just giddy, really overjoyed to be doing this, and then the other half of us is just burnt out. So it's both of those worlds mixed in. So, but the problem is that as Mr. Jerkowitz mentioned, you know, we're a perfect example of what he talked about. You know, the 90-10 split in revenue. He's absolutely right. We get about 93-94% of our revenues out of a print product, and the funny thing about that print product is that, you know, it seems as if we could almost put Greek in that thing at this point, you know. We hear nothing from people about what we throw in the print. In fact, the only time that we get really big complaints about the print is if we print, put something offensive on the cover. That's happened. Or get this, if we republish something that's already been online. Because people say, oh, you know, You're putting reheated crap from your online into your print edition. And, you know, meanwhile, reverse publishing is what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, that's like the Holy Grail. And when people see that, they're like, oh, you guys, you stink. You know, you're just, you know, reheating your garbage. And so that is really, really discouraging when your publisher says, you guys need to reverse publish, and then the people say, you know, you guys are lame. So anyway,
well, I wanted to talk to the burnt out side of you for one second here, because this we brought up earlier, and the answer you just gave me kind of reinforced it, and that is the rising expectations of your online readership. Awesome. I get the impression from what you just said that because maybe they can respond more instantly than your newspaper readers, that the expectations of the online readership rise at a very, very rapid rate and therefore make more and more demands on you guys on a daily 24/7 basis.
That's absolutely true. I mean, Politico...
For 7% of your revenue.
Right, it's absolutely true. Politico has coined the term win the day, win the morning, win the dawn, you know, and that's the way it's heading. I mean, I'm not nearly as burned out as my reporters. Our reporters are, you know, they're stretched really thin. And they love journalism too. So, you know, no one's making a federal case out of it. It's more challenging, you know. And if somehow all this money could migrate to online, that would make everything more simple, I think, is all we're saying.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation on alternative news media. You can still call us, 800-433-8850. If you have already called, we'll try to get to your call. If not, you can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or an email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the Premier Healthcare Alliance, uniting 2,200 nonprofit hospitals to improve the quality, safety, and affordability of healthcare. More about how they're transforming healthcare to improve patient outcomes is at premierfacts.com. From Sapient, a global interactive agency with offices in D.C., committed to helping market-leading businesses stay in the lead with strategy, design, and technology for digital marketing, e-commerce, and social media. More at sapient.com. From Arnold, D.C., committed to building brands that engage consumers by identifying the intersection of what is true and what is meaningful. More at arnolddc.com.
Coming up in 16 minutes on Tell Me More, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says more than 500,000 households don't have access to an adequate amount of food. Michelle Martin talks with Congresswoman Gwen Moore about what she's doing to combat the problem and relates her own personal story about being a single mother on welfare. Also joining the conversation, Jan Pruitt, president and CEO of North Texas Food Bank, who is seeing an increase in clients at those food banks. WAMU 88.5 and the Phillips Collection are giving away tickets to see Man Ray, African Art and the Modernist Lens Exhibition. On view now. More information, go to WAMU.org under calendar. Now let's return to the conversation on the Kojo Namdi Show.
We're talking about alternative news media in general and newspapers in particular with Kevin Neff. He was the editor of the Washington Blade. He is now the editor of the DC Agenda, which is the new paper that will hit the streets tomorrow. aimed at Washington, or not necessarily aimed at Washington's gay community, but telling us about Washington's gay community. He joins us in the studio along with Mark Jerkowitz, who is the Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Joining us by telephone is Richard Karpel, Executive Director of the Association for Alternative Newsweeklies. He's the incoming Executive Director of the American Society of News Editors. And Eric Rempel is the editor of the Washington City Paper. He also joins us by telephone. Richard, you're leaving the Alternative Weekly world soon to head up the American Society of News Editors. How does this experience in the alternative area shape your outlook for the challenges facing ASNE members?
Well, you can tell I'm not optimistic in terms of the print part of it. What I am optimistic about is that there's going to be journalism. There will be editors. There may be fewer editors. They're going to be doing different things, and they may even be getting paid less, but there will be editors. So, I feel good about the future of the people I'm going to be representing, people who edit news.
And, of course, this used to be called the American Society of Newspaper Editors, but they have taken the paper out of the name, and in a way, it's appropriate because Richard never actually worked as a news editor before. He came to the Alternative Weekly Association from the Video Software Dealers Association. I really like what you told the editor and publisher, that your personal experiences help you to see the forest from the trees.
Right.
Quoting here, Richard said, "You wouldn't hire me to edit a newspaper, so why would you hire a newspaper editor to run an association?" So Richard will be running the association. What's your initial prognosis for what lies ahead for the organization?
For what? For the my current organization?
No, their new organization, ASNE.
Well, I think ultimately we're going to be the Association of News Editors. So right now it's the newspaper editors. They've kind of teed it up for me and making the bylaws change, and now they're allowing all editors in. And I think there's going to be growth in the future. I feel really good about it.
Well, there's another newspaper in this town that we have not yet discussed, Eric Rempel, and I know you've been following this. Fewer places can boast that there are two paper towns these days, and one of Washington's daily newspapers, the Washington Times, is in a pretty chaotic state right now. What have you been able to find out about what's going on there? The changes that have been made at the top have been, for those of us who only see accounts of it in the newspapers, fairly mysterious, and there has always been a shroud of mystery, if you will, surrounding the upper echelon of the Washington Times, and that shroud of mystery seems to have been fading for a while. The picture seemed to have been getting clearer, but recent events make it seem as if it's becoming even more shrouded in mystery again.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington Times is, like all of us, is an institution that thrives to the extent that other institutions are transparent so they can report on them. But the Washington Times is a model of opacity itself. And so it's very difficult to determine, and I'd like to credit the TPM LiveWire's reporting on this. They've done
That's where
amazing,
I saw it, you're right.
Yeah, they've done some amazing work on this, and I've done some reporting and not gotten terribly far, I must confess. But I think there are two competing, views of what happened here. One is that, that the Washington Times is running into economic difficulties, and Solomon spent a lot of money on, and Solomon and Thomas McDevitt, who is a publisher, spent a lot of money on a web overhaul and some other things, and a lot of high-priced talent, including Jeff Berman from the Washington Post. And so they're having trouble. The other way of looking at it is that there's yet another convulsion in the leadership of the Unification Church, and that the parties that won out in that particular struggle somehow didn't like this the way the Washington Times was being run. I think that at some point it's up to our interpretations as to figure out exactly what happened. The truth will eventually come out as more people peel off of the organization and more was known. But yes, it's hard to say that it's definitively something that this is another symptom of the media environment these days, because the Washington Times is just so weird that you can never say with certainty that that it is conforming to the same problems as the rest of the
complicating all of this is that former Opinion Page editor Richard Miniter, I hope that's how his last name is pronounced, he's filed a religious discrimination suit against the paper, saying that the company president coerced him into attending a Unification Church event in 2008 that included a mass wedding. Regardless of whether or not that's true, and that's obviously going to be played out in court, Mark Jerkowitz, what Eric Wemple said is true, and that is the Washington Times has not been typical in that it has always had the support of the Unification Church, even though it had been known to have been losing money for years. It was always felt that the Unification Church would buttress it. The indications now are that we're not sure of that.
The internal machinations there, I can't claim to be an expert. Eric certainly knows more than I do. There are certainly a number of publications in this country that have been propped up by owners that have lost money for a long time for various reasons. One of the great examples is, frankly, is the New York Post and Rupert Murdoch, the Christian Science Monitor, which has been subsidized by the Christian Science Church for many, many years. We don't know. Eric said, hey, this could be part of the broader systemic problem for the media. It also could be a function of the organization itself, and perhaps very likely when we find out it's going to be some combination of the two. But it's hard to look at. The Times is a kind of a unique institution, so it's hard to draw the same clear lessons from this situation that you might from other publications.
Indeed.
Same can I just say one more thing?
Go ahead, Eric.
In recent years, starting with, I don't know, maybe in the mid-aughts, they started cutting back their Metro staff, by crews. I mean, they just wiped out their Metro staff. And they hired maybe one or two more people. And they have a Metro staff of maybe like four or five people.
And they used to have a good Metro staff.
They used to have a really serious Metro staff. Now, under Solomon, they focused on national politics pretty much. They became, conservative national politics. And anybody will tell you that, and Jerkowitz, I'd like to hear you on this. How do you sell national advertising for national politics? It is a Herculean a task to try to do that. I don't think anybody has really ever succeeded in selling national politics.
Well, Mark, now that Eric has taken over,
I've never been on the sales side of the business, but that sounds totally accurate to me. The other truism I would say, and we see this, and there's a situation in Boston where the Boston Herald and the Globe are still making it a two-newspaper town, is one of the things we've learned is that when times get tough in the media industry, they get disproportionately tough for the second paper in town. The pain isn't – people don't cut their advertising budgets by 50% for the top paper and the second paper. They do it disproportionately. That's one of the reasons we have fewer.
When I got to this town, it was a three-paper town. It had the News and it had the Evening Star. The News and the Evening Star merged, and then that went out of business. And since then, we've had the Washington Times. Richard Carpel, a place like the Washington Times considers itself an alternative voice in our media market, particularly the voices in its editorial pages. Where does a paper like the Times, which stakes out ideological ground rather often, fit into this conversation about alternative media, in your view?
Actually, I don't think they do at all, because I think the one thing I think that characterizes alternative media is, and Mark touched on it a little bit before, is a voice and more direct. I think one of the things you have with the mainstream press is the attempt to get to objectivity, and so there's a certain kind of code that they write in to try to get to that. Whereas if you're going to read the Washington City paper, it's going to, again, the reporter is going to tell you what he knows or he or she knows or what they think. So it's much more direct. I wasn't an expert on Washington Times, and I didn't read it very much. But when I did, it read like I think for the most part like a regular daily newspaper. So it, it was again, the language was just a little bit different. I mean, it's great. There's a lot of I think I'm of the belief of letting let a thousand flowers bloom. So I think all different kinds of journalism are great, but just because they were conservative in their opinion pieces, I don't think it made them alternative.
Which brings me to this, Kevin Neff. How do you strike the balance between reporting and attitude? One of the things that characterizes alternative media is what I call attitude. How do you strike that balance?
I'm all for attitude. I actually left mainstream dailies. I was at Reuters and I was at the Baltimore Sun.
Yep.
And I found it a little stifling, particularly working online, where I felt that we should have had more, you know, more freedom, more creative freedom, more leeway to get into opinions and to write with more of a voice. And so it's been refreshing for me, and I encourage folks to use Attitude.
On to Nathaniel in Frederick, Maryland. Nathaniel, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. You know, I actually am just starting a alternative magazine in Frederick, Maryland with a whole bunch of local artists and friends. And, you know, the thing I thought interesting in the conversation is you were talking about generational issues with sort of print media. And, I mean, we're all 22, 23, 24-year-olds doing this, you know, mainly to support the arts community here because we're pretty tight-knit. But I just thought that was kind of an interesting thing, you know, the fact that there's a lot of discussions about, you know, my generation not being interested in print media when I think it's just that the print media that's out there doesn't really appeal to us in a lot of ways.
So you're saying that print media with, I guess, Attitude, like Washington City Paper, like DC Agenda or what used to be Washington Blade, does appeal to younger people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not familiar with those papers. I'm not a DC native. You know, like I said, I live in Frederick. But, you know, I mean, the thing that we're trying to do and the thing that's gotten everybody excited is trying to open it to as many voices as possible. And, you know, really making sure that we can get as many different attitudes and opinions into the thing that we're putting together. You know, sort of an internet concept, I guess, sort of like a blog or something like that where you can respond and all of those
things. Is your magazine going to be exclusively online?
No, it's going to be a print magazine. We do have like a blog set up that we're putting together and, you know, a nightlife segment that will be on the internet. And
We're running out of time very quickly. So let me ask Eric Wemple this question. What do you know about Washington City Paper's demographic in terms of who reads the paper and who reads it online?
Well, I mean, the main thing we know is that, you know, we were founded in, you know, early 80s, and the demographic has aged with us. So as we go along, the demographic gets older. You know, when I first started here 15 years ago, it was in, you know, in the sweet spot, like early 30s. But then as I get older, the demographic gets older with me. So that's what we know.
And I'm afraid that's about all the time we have. Eric Wemple, who personifies Attitude, is editor of the Washington City Paper. Eric, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Richard Carpel is the executive director of the Association of Alternative Newsweeklies. He's the incoming executive director of the American Society of News Editors. Richard, good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Neff was the editor of the Washington Blade. He's now the editor of a new publication, The DC Agenda, which hits the streets tomorrow. Eric, mucho, mucho good luck to you.
Thanks for having me. And savetheblade.com is my crass plug for anyone looking for information or to help us.
Savetheblade.com. We'll try to provide a link to savetheblade.com. Mark Jerkowitz is the associate director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, former ombudsman and media beat writer at the Boston Globe, former columnist and press critic at the Boston Phoenix newspaper. Mark, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Kojo.
And thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi. Coming up tomorrow on the Politics Hour, the rules of the road for political controversies. First, the district crashes with the Catholic Church in the debate over a gay marriage proposal. Then, why one local congressman wants to cut off the president's plan to try detainees on American soil. The Politics Hour, tomorrow at noon on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Washington Performing Arts Society, presenting the New York Philharmonic under Ricardo Muti, November 1st at 4.